Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
We're off and rolling here. Midway through the work week. At the end of today, you'll be closer to the end of the week than you are to the beginning. That's always a positive. Jason Martin and Jeff Schwartz, who you hear laughing in the background, he's down in Dallas, Texas. I am here in Nashville, Tennessee. The crew is out in L.A., and Dub Yarbrough is here with me in the Music City. Clay Travis is in Mexico with his family. We're here for the next couple of days. And this is the interesting season, Jeff, because we don't technically know what's going to happen from day to day. I know that's true in sports a lot of times, but there are times of the year where you just kind of have a sense generally what you're going to be speaking about. Correct. This time of year, you don't know. Sometimes you get something that's just unbelievable, and sometimes you're kind of digging around and looking for what's interesting and what's entertaining. And I think that there are some things that are timely. And then we pretty much, within a few hours of us finishing up yesterday on the radio, Drew Brees is coming back. And I think that's where we can go, because we didn't ever get to Tom Brady yesterday. We didn't talk about Phillip Rivers yesterday. We didn't talk about some of these quarterbacks that we are seeing. If it's not the end, we're seeing near the end of their career. And Brees sat back and thought about this for a few weeks and decided he wants to run it back at least one more time with the Saints. I think one of the hardest things to do in all of sports is to walk away when you still think you can play, even if it's the right decision to make. Drew Brees has certainly earned the right to go out on his own terms, at least until he can't play anymore. And we don't know if that's the case, but generally, historically, when quarterbacks fall, it's not gradual and it's not pretty. It's usually off a cliff and it's a plummet to the surface. I don't know if we're there with Drew Brees yet. Drew Brees certainly doesn't think so. But again, there are very few John Elways who have walked away after winning a Super Bowl. It just doesn't happen very often. What are your initial takeaways about Brees coming back to this offense at least for one more year to make a run? When considering probably a couple weeks before the end of the regular season, you and I had a discussion and we said we think the Saints might be in the Super Bowl from the NFC this past season.
I mean, I think that's it right there, right? Is they have a team capable of winning the Super Bowl. I don't think he comes back if he believes his team doesn't have a shot to win the whole thing. Because at his age, he doesn't have to play. He wants to play to win a Super Bowl. And he knows that broadcasting will be his thing if he wants it when he's done playing. And that's one thing as well. I'm sure he talked to Romo. I'm sure he talked to other ex-quarterbacks that are doing the broadcasting gig. And they probably all told him, dude, if you can still play, continue to play. Because you'll never get this time back, right? If you can still play, you will regret retiring early if you still think you have a chance to win another Super Bowl or a Super Bowl at all. And I think he realizes that his team is good. He has obviously great chemistry with Sean Payton. He's able to continue to play in that dome, which obviously helps him very much, and run it back for another year, maybe another year or two. You know, they add a couple pieces on offense for him. Michael Thomas obviously is outstanding, but they need a couple pieces to help him. And they're right back in the, in the playoffs, and they're ready to win now. There is some talk, I'm going to write about this year, about, Sean Payton gets an awful easy pass for some of the playoff woes the Saints have had since their last Super Bowl. They won the Super Bowl, I think, 11 years ago now.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And he gets a pass for a lot of their fellow. They've lost as over a touchdown favorite now in the playoffs multiple times. Once in Seattle with the Beast Quake game, this year against the Vikings. They've lost an awful lot of games as big favorites in the playoffs, which is hard to do and hard to do multiple times. And so I wonder if Sean Payton starts getting questioned a little bit about his coaching ability. He had that stretch of went 7-9 3 years in a row. But it makes total sense for Drew to come back. Of course they want him back. No guys, their third-string quarterback, Taysom Hill, is not a future star in the NFL. He's not the answer if Drew Brees were to leave. That's such silly talk right now, and I hope that the people that are spreading those thoughts about Taysom Hill are getting paid very well by his public relations department. no way that a 31-year-old player who has 13 career passes in three seasons is going to be the future quarterback of any team. You know, they thought so highly of Taysom Hill that when Teddy Bridgewater became the quarterback for 5 weeks, Taysom Hill saw the field one time through one pass. And didn't see the field one time, but through one pass. So that's not happening. There was no other option for the Saints besides obviously Bridgewater, and Breeze is better than him. So good for the Saints, good for Breeze, running back again, very talented team. Will be maybe the favorite to win the NFC.
Back to the Taysom Hill argument. Is that just Sean Payton playing around, trying to figure out how much smarter he thinks he is than everybody else with the way that he utilized him? Because there were times when he would come in. Now, obviously, when he came in the postseason, he actually had a pretty solid performance in that game. But he's more of a gadget. He's more of just kind of a gimmick kind of guy, at least the way he's employed. But it seems like many teams would not utilize him at all. And this is Sean Payton wanting to show his football acumen. Or am I reading that incorrectly?
It is very surprising how much they use him, in my opinion. Even Troy Aikman in the playoff game, right before Taysom Hill threw the pass, he said, Joe, I'd never take Drew Brees out. And obviously, Taysom Hill had the big completion. I'm with Troy. I'm shocked at how often they use Taysom Hill when it feels like Drew Brees is rolling. It doesn't feel like there's sometimes a rhyme or reason when they put him in. And obviously, he hit the big completion, and which, by the way, was a severely underthrown ball. It wasn't a good ball, but obviously a big explosive play. They needed it at that moment. I think that the reason why, in my opinion, it works, and the reason why I would do this as a coach as well, is you put him in for three or four plays a game. And what it does is it forces the defense to have to spend a ton of time preparing for that specific package. And it forces them to spend less time preparing for your entire offense. And that's why some of the teams do. Plus, look, they gain yards. It's not like they don't gain yards on these plays. But that's, I think, a big reason why they do it, is it forces defenses to have to prepare extra for three or four plays or a package of plays, and they don't know what the plays are always going to be week to week, but there's a small amount of offense that's in for Taysom Hill each week, right? He runs two or three run plays, a couple pass plays maybe. That's it. That's the package each week. It's not some ginormous package. He's not running the base offense, and I think it's just Sean Payton just trying to mess with the defense.
Well, I think there's something to the effect that if you have a defense having to account for you and pay attention to what you're doing when it's such a small section of what the Saints are actually going to do when they go out onto the field, but you have to pay attention to it because those three or four plays could turn into a couple of gigantic gains that flip a field, then it does become strategically effective to use him. But it seems so unthinkable to me that you would ever bench a quarterback like Drew Brees. I mean, we're not talking about a marginal quarterback here in the league where, you know, the old adage that if you have two quarterbacks, you have zero. You have a quarterback. Like, you have a quarterback that many teams in the league would covet ever having at any point in the history of their franchise. And you're benching him for this dude that's going to go out there and be gimmickry. But at the same time, it has proved beneficial, although we haven't seen the Saints in the Super Bowl since, as you mentioned, 11 years ago.
Yeah. Again, it's a changeup for the offense. It allows them to be a little more flexible, allows them to do some different things. You know, on when they run the ball with Taysom Hill, they often get an extra blocker because the quarterback becomes a runner. So there's some advantages to playing him in the manner they do it. It's not a lot. And like I said, the offense is still through Drew Brees. This whole story about being a star man, like, guys, Taysom Hill is not Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson is Lamar Jackson. He's the only guy who's Lamar Jackson. There's no one like him. No one is as good an athlete as Lamar. And so the idea that you could just bring in Taysom Hill to your offense, excuse me, and he's all of a sudden going to be some Lamar Jackson is just not the way that works in the NFL. And I don't understand why Florio of Pro Football Talk is pushing this so vigorously that Taysom Hill is a future star. He's going to be, you know, he's going to get a restricted free agent number. He's worth about $5 to $6 million a year. It's all I'd pay him. He's a special teams guy. If Sean Payton loved him so much as just a quarterback A, he would have gone in for Drew Brees when Brees got hurt, and B, he wouldn't be on special teams all the time.
Right. So how much do you think? All right, so we know how good Michael Thomas is, especially when married to Drew Brees, but we also saw he played well with Teddy Bridgewater. There are expectations out there. I know ESPN did their kind of their pre-column where they say they're expecting a holdout for Alvin Kamara. If that's trouble, which I don't know if they get that worked out fairly early or not, he's going into the last year of his rookie deal. But you've got Thomas there. But one of the things that we noticed about the Saints last year, and it may have been what ultimately dogged them, is outside of Thomas and outside of Kamara, there wasn't much there. They didn't have a lot of depth at the wide receiver position. It's something that they're certainly going to have to address sooner rather than later. But prognosticate how much, or just maybe estimate in your own opinion, how much do you think Drew Brees does have left? You mentioned maybe 2 years. Do you think he has 2 years of decent to good football left in him?
I think we talked about this on this show, the idea of a quarterback basically sitting out in the middle of the season like Brees did this year and how fresh it made him compared to 2 years ago when it felt like his arm kind of died. I think that Drew Brees is going to, you know, he's an older quarterback. His arm strength is going to die as the season goes on. And so I think he still has a lot left in the tank as far as his ability and his need to play, his want to play. Obviously, his mental side is going to be really good. But they do need to get him another weapon, either at tight end. Cook's okay at tight end, or wide receiver. And this is a very deep wide receiver class in the draft. It feels like a great year to snag yourself a wide receiver.
No doubt.
With Thomas. And so that's, I think, their priority this offseason. Their offensive line is good. I would not pay Kamara. I think building your team via paying running backs either as a free agent or as a second contract makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, we're seeing that across the league. When I was reading the the NFL Nation reporters from ESPN, like all of the individual reporters for the teams, and what they thought should happen during the offseason, I read two things back-to-back in the same division that just showed you an indicator that what you're saying is certainly not off the reservation. One was that Arizona's desperately trying to get out of the David Johnson business at this point, and right underneath it, the Rams, in the very same NFC West division, are in an awful spot from a cap perspective and otherwise with Todd Gurley. And those are two guys that, look, they were tops of the fantasy, probably won your fantasy league at least once in the last 3 years, or were one of the reasons for it. And now both those teams can't wait to get away from those running backs. Zeke didn't end up doing nearly as much, I think, as most people expected. Bell didn't certainly pay off with all the other problems that were going on in New York. I feel like what we've come to when it comes to running backs is running backs are a luxury. That if you can somehow make it happen, that's good, but they're not a necessity in terms of you've got to have a top-flight running back on your team to be able to compete in this league. I don't think so. I think at this point it's the fancy sports car that you can get if you have other things buttoned up, and it becomes a hugely beneficial thing if you're there, but to splurge for that car first just makes no sense.
And I would even argue that it's not even worth the splurge if you have the money. I mean, if you have some money and I know there's a floor you have to spend, so you have to spend money if you're a team sometimes, or it's kind of a rolling 3 year period. We have to spend the money. I think rolling 4 year period is that try to get yourself another cornerback, another pass rusher, another offensive lineman. I mean, look at the Super Bowl, two undrafted free agents at running back, that Damian Williams, people argue, and I think wrongfully so, that should have been the MVP of the game. You do not need to have a stud running back, a highly drafted or highly paid running back to win in the NFL. You do not need that. You need a good left tackle. You need multiple cornerbacks. You need multiple pass rushers. You need a quarterback, obviously. You need a tight end. I mean, there's things you need ahead of a running back all the time. And if I was running a team, Jason, I would never pay a running back a second contract or draft a running back in the first round. Never, ever. I don't care how good they are. I don't care if it's Jim Brown. In today's day and age, Adrian Peterson, there's no point in doing that. Saquon Barkley they've won 8 games in 2 years. He's been there since he's played. Like, what? He's not helping them win.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Jason Martin, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay. Clay's back on Monday. Jeff's at Jeff Schwartz. Clay's at Clay Travis. I'm at J Mart Zone. Crew out in L.A. doing a fantastic job. We'll speak to them here shortly, I would imagine. Also, Dub here in Nashville. If you want to talk to us, you can tweet us or you can call us at 877-99 on Fox. That's 996-6369. All right, Jeff. I know we're both excited to talk about this because we both have very passionate opinions about it. The XFL is now 2 weeks in. Here are the numbers. The first week was decent. Like, the first run of the XFL when it started, I think 14 million people watched the first week of games back in 2001. The numbers were respectable, were actually pretty good in the first week, and then here's what week two did. 2.262 million average viewers, a peak of 3.3, far above what the AAF did. There was a drop-off, no question about that, but it did retain a decent crop of the first-week audience, which is a bigger win than I was expecting, quite frankly, because I didn't see anybody talking about the XFL this weekend. And even in the first week, Jeff, ESPN's one of the television partners, and I was doing my show Sunday morning, and it was right after the first day's worth of games, and SportsCenter didn't get to XFL highlights for 17 minutes, and were showing women's and men's college basketball highlights and NBA highlights before they ever even touched this brand new football league that is going to set the world on fire, which I say with my tongue firmly in my cheek, because I've been on record on Fox, I've been on record on this show, I've been on record on pretty much anywhere I've had a microphone for years, that spring football ain't going to work. And I think that the XFL is doing some things right. I think it might be the closest that we've seen in a while in terms of they've got good broadcast teams, they've got great television deals in terms of their partnerships. Now, they're not making a lot of money off of that right now, but Vince is banking on a second deal, helping him recoup his losses.
Yeah.
And he's got good football people associated with it, although the AAF also had good football minds associated with it as well. But I think there's a number of places that we can go with this topic, and I imagine that a lot of you are going to be passionate about it. And I've asked for calls on my show and taken calls from people that have gone to and watched these games. But the first thing that I see is the biggest fallacy, the biggest, most fugazi argument in all of sports is that we need more football. And that people want more football. I don't think that's the case. I think people think, Jeff, that they want more football, but they actually don't.
So there's many things I feel about the XFL. One, I'll answer your question in just a second. I do want to commend the XFL for a couple things. One is that obviously they've invested money into it, unlike the AAF. At least we assume they have, right? Vince McMahon has much more money than the backers, the original backers of the AAF. Obviously, then, you know, they had someone come in and financially back them who eventually pulled the plug on the league. I give them credit for changing, for thinking outside the box with rules and broadcast. I call them kind of broadcast elements, right? Whether it's the open mics, whether it's the way they've interviewed players, the access in the halftime, you know, Molly McGrath grabbing the coach who did not want to be interviewed in halftime last week. But the issue remains, the product on the field is the reason why we watch sports. And we watch the NBA because of LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard and Westbrook and Harden and Giannis. We do not watch the NBA because they put on a great broadcast, right? We watch the NBA because of the product on the field. We watch baseball because of, you know, the Nationals
trash cans.
Well, yeah. By the way, there was a video yesterday of someone at Houston Astros spring training being a trash can the entire time. It was absolutely hilarious.
Man, didn't even. Can you imagine doing that at spring training? This is going to be something else to watch.
I'm all for it. And we watch the NFL and college football because of the product on the field, all right? You might like Tony Romo. You might like Aikman and Buck. You might like Vern Lundquist. I guess he's retired now, but you know, you might like Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson. You might like, I like listening to Keith Jackson back in the day. You might like listening to Herb Street, but you watch because the product on the field brings your attention, okay? And the problem with the XFL is the problem with the AAF, problem with every spring league, is the talent on the field is not good enough, right? There's two quarterbacks in the AAF that are worth anything, Cardale Jones and P.J. Walker. That's his name, right? P.J. Walker?
Yeah, well, wait a second now, Jeff. Look, we're talking relatively here. And one thing that I
relative to the XFL.
Yeah, they're not... There's a reason they're in the XFL. That's correct. Not their ultimate goal. Wait a second.
Go ahead.
Before we go any further, there's one thing that I want to make sure is perfectly clear, and I know that you couldn't agree more with this, and that is, I'm not rooting for this to fail. I'm paid to give my opinion on it, so I'm going to give you my honest, right, unvarnished opinion on it. But I love the idea that maybe there'd be another place where these guys could go chase what they want. Like, they could go after what they love and try to make a living doing it. I love that maybe there's a second act out there. I just don't think it's viable, and now we can get back to it.
Well, yeah. Like, I don't care either way. Like, if they fail, they don't fail. Like, they're not at all a threat to the NFL, and we'll get to that in a second. There's zero threat to the NFL, okay? so we want
to. Well, they're not trying to be.
They're not trying to be, but they know if they want to succeed at some point, they have to partner with the NFL. They have to do it. The only way they'll succeed. People have and let me answer your original question before we get to the NFL stuff. So we watch because of the product on the field, okay? That's why we watch, folks. You have a favorite team, you watch them play on the field. You want to see excellence on the field. Now, obviously, there's poor teams in the NFL. Not every fan base has excellent teams, but you watch for that reason, and the XFL does not have that. And that's why spring football doesn't work, Jason, is because there's not enough players that need to play spring football. We have a minor league already in the NFL. It's called college football. And as much as I would love a developmental league to happen, but for many reasons, it's not. So to answer your question, Jason, I think that people so miss NFL and college football that they're willing to welcome in the XFL. And I do think there is more fan support for the XFL than the AAF. They did a good job of rolling out teams. They did it in bigger cities. The AAF was trying to find smaller cities. And they did it, Seattle, for example, supports, they have the best, soccer support for their local soccer team. So putting, they got 30,000 people at XFL game, like putting it in strategically good cities that like sports is a good job. But again, to your point, I, as a football fan, I've watched a little bit of the XFL. I felt last weekend, I didn't feel as attached to wanting to watch it. Plus I don't really know anyone who's playing. It's part of my, I don't really care.
Jeff, there's no equity in this league. That's what it boils down to. It boils down to, you don't care. We don't care because we have no history with these teams. And unlike a lot of things that we'll embrace, we already have, and I say we, meaning the vast majority of the sports public at large, we already have an NFL team. We already have a college team, whether we went there or not, our parents went there, or whatever our rooting interest is. We already have rooting interest in this sport, and we just finished watching elite-level football you could say for months, but if you just want to talk about the postseason, we just saw the player, I think, of this generation in Patrick Mahomes, who's about to be 24 years old, and then they're going to then bring this out. It's like you're trying to follow up the main event. It's like you're fighting after Tyson fought in 1988, and they want you to stick around to watch that fight. Now, I had somebody argue with me and say, minor league baseball is a good thing for baseball. I'm not necessarily saying it isn't, but nobody's watching minor league baseball on TV long term. Like, how many minor league baseball games are even on television at all? I mean, college baseball doesn't even get watched.
Yeah, I was hoping that maybe we'd save some of this, the minor league stuff to the next segment, but we could discuss it now. The reason why there's no minor league football is because of college football. Obviously, it's free for the NFL to watch. There's a a kind of a unified grading scale, right? Like, you know exactly when you're watching college football, okay, this player does this well, this translates to the NFL. We know the talent that's in college football. We know how it's supposed to look like college football. So you're very you know, easily able to discern what's happening on the field. We don't know that with the XFL quite yet. But also, the NFL doesn't really need a developmental league. And if it did, it would have to be during the season. It's, you know, people said to me on Twitter, well, why can't the XFL be that league? Well, here's why, guys. It's extremely unfair and actually really unhealthy to have a player who's a third string player, let's say. And I did this. I was on practice squad my first year in the NFL. So for me to have to practice every day in the NFL, and the practicing is Julius Peppers, by the way, who obviously is going to be a Hall of Famer for the Panthers. Practicing him every day, beat my body up, and then as soon as the season's over, I then go to the XFL for 3 months and then back to my team in the offseason for the offseason program. There's no value in an NFL player playing the XFL. Getting reps just to get reps against bad opponents does nothing to help you evaluate or help the NFL scouts evaluate you for playing the NFL. Like, if I'm on practice squad in the Panthers and I go to the XFL and I play well, I should play well. I'm in the NFL. I'm on the XFL. Like, I should play against inferior opponents. That does nothing to help me as a player whatsoever. Right, NFL Europe was good because actually there were good players that were playing in NFL Europe. And it was sponsored by the NFL. The NFL was part of that idea. And it was also in a time when, you know, there weren't as many teams in the NFL, right? So you had more players in the NFL Europe. This is not going to work because, A, there's not enough NFL players to go around that need to play in a developmental league. And two, it's during the winter and not during the season. A developmental league has to be during the season, has to be sponsored by the NFL, has to be part, and the NFL doesn't want to know part of it.
The other thing is, and I've made this point before, and there was something that I think a lot of people glossed over when it was first put out there, and this is around a year ago, maybe even longer, is that Vince McMahon had put aside somewhere around $150 million per season for the first three seasons, just set it aside and said, we're going to lose this money. That's what he told his company. That's what he told the people associated with the league. He said, $450 million, I know I'm going to lose, but I'm hoping that maybe I can recoup this on a second run of television contracts, and this $450 after 3 years, then we can actually break even, and then maybe we can profit. I think it's very ambitious to think that this could actually go for 3 years. I don't think there will be a second XFL champion. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah,
I think they'll probably get through this first season, but you're seeing there was an initial curiosity. The football was not bad, but yet again, I think it's made so much worse by what we just saw on a football field from the NFL and what we just saw in college as well.
Yeah.
We just saw the very best. And now, hey, if you want more football, this ain't bad. I don't think that ad campaign works long term. I don't think that you hold an audience. Like, people plan their schedules around Sunday NFL. Churches start to run their services earlier on Sunday mornings because they know the attendance will be better if they get people out in time to make it home for the Sunday early kickoffs. People are not planning their schedule around XFL football. I just don't see that in this universe.
No, they're not. And when not this weekend, but next weekend, we have NFL Combine. And I'm here in Dallas working with some Combine players on the offensive line. And I saw the schedule yesterday for the entire Combine. They all moved everything around to do basically all the workouts in prime time. It's going to be on TV. I think one of the days is on ABC. Like, it's on primetime television. It's a big deal. No one's going to tune in to the XFL. A couple weeks after that is March Madness. Then we have the Masters. Like, no one's going to watch the XFL once we get these other sports up and running. Right now, everyone's obviously watching it because nothing on TV. But again, last weekend, I had it on a couple times. I wanted to watch something. But I don't feel an attachment to the league because I don't know the players, and there's no team obviously in Charlotte. But I'm just to your point, it's like, all right, just on, It's just the football's not. And again, I go to this point every time. The football is not very good. The quarterbacks aren't good. The offensive lines aren't good. And
you can just stop right there. When you say the quarterbacks aren't good, you've lost football.
I know.
Like, if you don't have quarterbacks, you don't have stars.
And I'm just surprised at how many people think that, like, they want to be excited to watch bad football. Like, it always surprises me sometimes, too, when people always say, like, yeah, I just like college sports better than pro sports. Like, I mean, I understand having allegiance to a college team, right? You went to college, you love that team. But if you like football, how do you only like college football? The pro game is much better. It's quicker, better players. You know, obviously there's more offense. It's a more balanced game. There's more defense played. Like, I don't know how you can only like the inferior product. Just like the XFL, people are so, I think they want it so to succeed. So they want, I think part of it too, Jason, is people don't like the NFL as far as the ownership and Goodell, and they want something to challenge the NFL, to make the NFL uncomfortable. But this is no challenge to the NFL, folks. It's just a blip on the NFL's radar. This is no challenge whatsoever to the NFL. It's not the AFL. Like, it's not in 1960, right? The NFL is a monopoly. They are the biggest sports brand in America. They're not worried about the XFL.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Maybe something we'll get into more tomorrow, but local ratings for 27 of the NBA's 30 teams, not included Utah, Memphis, and Toronto, at least in this report. Ratings data compiled by the Sports Business Journal. Those 27 squads are down 13% on their local regional sports networks, 14 of the 27 experiencing significant declines in viewership. Ratings nationally have dropped by 12%, 10% on ESPN, 13 on TNT, 16 on ABC, so 12 is your average there. That's not good. It's really not. Golden State Warriors ratings have declined by 66% regionally, which, I can probably understand that. If you're trying to lose and you've gone from what they've been, it's been a penthouse to outhouse situation, to say the least. But maybe something we can get into tomorrow as the second half of the NBA season cranks up, Jeff. Tomorrow, actually, is when the games begin again. People are just not. I thought that there was going to be more excitement in this regular season because of how many stars were being spread around in a lot of different locales, and it just has not turned out to be that way. And I think it again comes down to a lengthy season and a postseason that goes forever, where you know that everybody that's good is already going to make it because half the league gets into the playoffs to begin with.
Well, then that's the problem right there, right? Is that, and we talked about this earlier in the show, but it's worth reiterating again, the difference between football and other sports is football has a huge sense of urgency, right? You play 12 games in college, you play 16 in the NFL. Each week feels important. And the NBA doesn't feel that way. Like, to your point, and it's exactly true. I'm a Lakers fan, right? I've watched, I think, one full Lakers game this year because I know, first of all, the time difference is very tough out on the East Coast, but I know that come the Western Conference Finals, I'll get at the minimum 4 games, but probably 7 of Lakers Clippers. And, like, I know that's going to happen. I already know it's going to happen. I know in the East, probably the Bucks, right? The Celtics, maybe. I mean, like, the Sixers. Like, you know the teams are going to be in there. And in other sports, you don't know that, right? The Niners had 4 wins the year before and won the Super Bowl. The Washington Nationals won the World Series last year. Like, you don't know this. In basketball, it just feels like we know exactly what's going to happen. And also, when you have, you know, the best player, Kawhi Leonard, just skip half his games, how are you, as a fan, are you going to be excited to watch the product on the court if you feel the players don't even care about it?
And you're definitely not buying tickets. That's another problem. It's like, why would you spend the money for your family of four to go to an NBA game, even if one of the great teams is coming to your market, knowing that that might be a time where they load manage and don't play?
Exactly.
That's another significant issue. I don't know exactly how to even address that. I guess there's a way Adam Silver could find a way around it, but I mean, you could always come up with fake injuries.
You have to, I mean, you almost have to refund if they do the load management, right? But obviously they don't blame it on load manager. They blame it on some sort of injury that they have. And what's really interesting about the regional sports networks being down is that in baseball, it's the opposite, right? National numbers are down, but regional numbers are up. And therefore, you know, basically it's keeping baseball going is the regional numbers continue to be up every year because it's a very regionalized sport, right? St. Louis loves the Cardinals. The LA, the Dodgers have a weird TV deal, but LA, you know, they like their Dodgers. And you don't have, I think, that same connection at times with NBA teams because it feels all so predetermined.
It does. And it doesn't feel like there is parity there, even though you do see some teams elevate in, and there may be more parity in terms of the champions over the last three decades than maybe some people would think, but it always appears to be dominated by a very select few. And just again, I think that rarity makes something feel much more essential, which goes back to the idea that the XFL is never going to feel essential. It actually harms the rarity of football, but it doesn't harm the rarity of elite football. We still see a major difference between what we see during a college or an NFL season, in high-end games in particular, than the best that the NFL or that the XFL could offer. The best game that the XFL could offer is still going to pale in comparison to even an average NFL game. And people were telling me the speed is exactly like the NFL. They were saying that. You tell me that as an observer, as somebody that played it. They said the XFL speed, some of the players in the XFL were saying, this speed's exactly what I experienced in the NFL.
No.
And I'm just what else are you going to say? But that ain't the same game that I've been watching.
And by the way, folks, the best XFL team is never beating an NFL team. That's very obvious. But I'll give you this though. The best XFL team is probably beating LSU. I think people have gone overboard in the other direction now on that topic as well. But it's just not the same, guys. It's okay for them to be different. Doesn't mean we're haters. I watch the XFL. I'm fine with it. But as far as viability and how long it's going to last, I'm with Jason. I don't think we see a second champion of the XFL.
I don't. I don't. I don't see Vince's pride being able to sustain him just being some kind of a feeder league. And I don't know that there's enough talent out there that wants to be fed in terms of, I don't know that there's enough that's going to be fed. I just don't know that there's enough that, like, if you lose quarterbacks to the NFL, which I don't think you're going to do, who are you replacing them with? That's a frightening thought in itself.